Man with Rowdy Alternative. Today we have a special guest, Tristan Tritt. What's up, man?
How's it going, brother?
Not much, man. It's hot as hell here. Where are you at? Are you in Nashville or where are you?
I'm just outside of Atlanta. I'm in, I say Marietta, but I'm close to that area. So yeah, it's hot as all get out.
Yeah, I'm in right outside Cincinnati, so I'm not too terribly far from where you're at. But yeah, it's getting hot and humid, and I hate it a lot.
It's that time of the year, man. It's nice in Georgia for about 2.5 months, and then it just becomes the devil's cod sack for the rest of the year.
You're right. Oh man. All right, dude. Let's hop into it. Just get people familiar with you who might not know you yet. I'm gonna go ahead and get the dad question out of the way because you probably get asked it all the time. So,
go ahead.
I guess we'll just start out with, when you wanted to pursue music, or maybe even before you decided to pursue music, was there any kind of like a pressure from people around you, or like an expectation to do that?
There wasn't really much as an expectation as there was like a kind of a pressure that I put on myself. I kind of assumed that people would have an issue with me not going the traditional route and choosing country. But from the most part, I mean, I've been doing this about 4 years now, and everyone's seemed to, you know, welcome me with open arms, and they love what I'm doing. So that's always exciting. You know, it's kind of scary at first, but from what I can tell, people are enjoying it, and it's awesome.
Yeah, man. And I could speak for myself. Like I recently started to get into your stuff, and I was really impressed with it. And like the thing is, like being a new, like a rock artist, like a younger new rock artist, like I don't know what you think, but like seeing the guys out there now, like you and like Austin Mead, or you could go higher than that, like Greta Van Fleet, like it's really promising to me. And has that always been like, have you always leaned rock, or did you even like try to do the country stuff?
Nah, since the beginning, I've always just been in love with rock, and rock has always caught my attention. I mean, it's what made me fall in love with music. And a lot of that, I have to kind of point the finger at Guitar Hero for putting me on such a, you know, incredible path with such good music and such good exposure to artists. So it was awesome, man. So rock has never, it's always put me in that direction. Country was always great, but rock really just, it kind of took the reins from there on out.
Awesome. Yeah. And that's hilarious that you brought up Guitar Hero, because damn, I'm trying to remember who I was even talking to about it. I was interviewing someone on here, and like what got them into playing music was Guitar Hero too. And like, if you think about it, it's like that is what introduced a lot of people like around our age to rock and roll music. I know, like, you know, that's the first time I ever heard like Cherry Pie by Warrant. I think that was on Guitar Hero. So it's really cool. It's funny seeing like people our age, like they're using that as like one of their inspirations. It's funny.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the catalyst, I think, for exposing so many people. You know, when, I don't know about you, I was probably like 6 or 7 when it came out. So it was the first time I ever heard War Pigs by Black Sabbath. And the first time I heard that, I was like, holy shit, like, I don't know what this is, but I want to dedicate my life to this. And that was kind of like, you know, off to the races after that.
Yeah. So is Sabbath like a big influence on you?
Massive. I think anything Ozzy does is just, you know, incredible. I mean, even his last record was just, for him being as old as he is, that's incredible. His voice is so strong.
Yeah. I hope he stays with us for a lot longer, man. But he scared me. Like he had to cancel shows. Yeah, he had to cancel shows here. He had that No More Tours. It was supposed to be those farewell tour or something a couple years ago. And the dates here in Cincy, it literally, I think it got canceled 2 years in a row. And then finally, he just kind of said, fuck it, I'm done with this.
Yeah, but, and rightfully so.
Yeah, hopefully
so,
he's here for a lot longer.
Yes, I trust me. I hope we have him as long as we possibly can. That guy's a treasure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So, how would you describe your sound? It's obviously rock, but like, is there any other kind of way that you would describe it, or how you try to make it sound?
Absolutely. I take a lot of influence from just being a Georgia native, and there's a lot of, obviously, blues that's tied into just Georgia as a whole. It's always had such a strong presence of really strong vocalists, Ray Charles, guys like that. So I take a little bit of elements here and there of like Delta blues, as well as even more 70s funk style stuff, just with like the percussive structure of some of the songs. I like to get really experimental sometimes, and especially within the last probably year and a half or so, me and the producers I've worked with have kind of just experimented with all these incredible plugins that are available now. And there's just so much to use and to capitalize on to just kind of make the sound bigger. And beforehand, I was kind of a, I don't want to say a purist, but I didn't want to, I wanted to stick with the analog gear, outboard gear, you know, the Dave Grohl approach with that. And then I realized how much that cost, and I was like, well, that's not fucking possible. So it made me regroup real quick. So we got a lot more experimental once we realized, like, hey, like, we've got all these tools at our disposal, and it, there's no use in not utilizing it to have a more unique and obscure sound, you know, if it's there.
Right. Yeah. And like it sets you apart too. And like, that is something I noticed also, like upon like first listen, it's like, you have your sound, like your style that someone will equate you with, but like each song is also like different in its own way. It doesn't sound like you're listening to the same song. You know what I mean? So I think,
absolutely.
I think that's kind of what, yeah, that separates like artists who like have the drive, passion, the talent even, you know what I mean? Instead of like just staying formulaic, which sometimes formula works. I mean, look at AC/DC, but still, you know, I hope that made sense.
No, I was literally just going to say AC/DC, because you know when you're listening to AC/DC, you never know what you're going to get, you know, you know exactly what you're going to get. Yeah. But with someone like even more akin to an Avenged Sevenfold, like I personally love their newest album just because I know how much they like getting out of their comfort zone and trying something new. Mm-hmm. And I think as an artist, that's the entire, like sometimes fans can, you know, complain and bitch about that part. But I think as an artist, you're supposed to keep pushing that limit where it makes you uncomfortable, you know? And that's the whole purpose of why I got into this, you know, business, was so I could push myself creatively and do things that even I wasn't comfortable with, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's and like I said, kind of reiterating on you too, it's like, that's, I think that is like a make or break, like with like an artist, at least in my opinion. Like that's just normal. You want to hear some like cool new like experimental stuff, like the way you put it, because that's first off, it just sounds like it'd be fun from an artist standpoint. I don't know why they wouldn't want to go into the studio and work with different producers, work with different sound, like different technical stuff that I don't know about, but it just sounds like that would be like the top thing you'd want to do when you create. So who are the producers you worked with? You mentioned them earlier, but
One of the guys I've been working with the most, probably the last three or four songs I've released, a guy named Jerry Fuentes, and he was in a band called The Last Bandoleros. They're kind of on and off, but they're a fantastic band, and he's an incredible musician. He just has an incredible ear and really is good on picking up on the kind of sound that I'm going for and kind of pushing it further. You mentioned earlier guys like Austin Mead, and I've seen y'all have done interviews with Dexter and the Moon Rocks, which I love both of those guys. Like, those are incredible bands and artists. And I think that kind of sound is exactly what people are craving now, because it's a perfect, it's hard to describe in words, but it just makes sense. I think the phrase everyone's using now is y'alternative, right? But that kind of sound to me,
that's what I was about to say.
Yeah, it resonates better than anything I've seen in recent years, where I'm like, okay, these are the same guys that like I can understand exactly what they're doing creative wise, and like I appreciate it like crazy, because it's a mix between where they're coming from, you know, whether it's Texas or just being from the South, and then also throwing in distorted guitars and all that. So it's the perfect blend of the worlds, and I love that, man. It makes me feel so good about the future of music.
Yeah, and that's actually pretty much what I was thinking about when I first listened to you, is like you, the Moon Rocks, Austin, it's like, that sounds like you're if you had to put you somewhere, like in a playlist or a genre, like alternative, or I like shred dirt, like that's fun too.
Yeah, I love that.
Like that just sounds like a good area for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Quick, funny little anecdote. You brought up Dexter and the Moon Rocks. Mm-hmm. When I've never had an interview go completely off the rails and like commandeered from me in the best way possible. Like they hopped on and it was all of them. And man, like from the jump, I might have asked like two questions, and then they start like damn near interviewing me. And I'm sitting there like, I guess people like that.
It's like that scene from Step Brothers where they start conducting the interview. I love
literally,
it.
Literally, I was sitting there confused as hell, and they're just like talking to me like I'm the guest. But it was hilarious. I loved it. But
well, I gotta give them props. I haven't met the guys, but they're funny.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're funny. But who are? Let's talk about your writing a bit, man. Who are some? Well, first off, do you co-write at all? Do you collaborate? Do any of that?
Yeah, I do. I do a little bit of both. The last couple of songs have been written mainly just by me, and then have a producer do the instrumentation. But with a co-write, I never get above just me and another person. I think once you get too many, cooks in the kitchen, it becomes a problem creatively. Some people can do it. I know in Nashville particularly, that's not uncommon to have 5, 6, 7 people in a room doing a song, but I've just never been able to work that way. But having a co-write, I think if you've got another person coming in that can add on to what you're doing creatively, then that's, that's beautiful. And you really can get a great song from that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And are there any people that you would want to, it sounds like to me that you kind of like to do it yourself most of the time, but are there any people that you'd want to work with like in the future?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I mean, just the guys that I mentioned, Austin Mead, Dexter and the Moon Rocks, even there's a band from Minnesota called Dury. Those guys are insane. I believe it's a brother and a sister, but they're incredibly talented. Just a bunch of these artists that are out there right now that I think would be cool to collaborate with, even if they were completely, stylistically different. I would love to be able to try and make something with them in the future.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, because that's another beautiful thing about like the scene that they kind of put you in, the alternative stuff, is like none of it sounds like the same. You know what I mean? It's all different, but like they still somehow close you guys into the same genre. And it's kind of wild to see how that works out.
It was always an issue.
So what do you, no, go ahead, man.
Oh, sorry. No, I was saying it was always an issue in the beginning, just trying to like, when people would ask me, what's your genre? Like what's your subgenre of rock and all that stuff. And I was like, I don't know how the hell to answer this question. Like it's whatever you categorize it as, but I guess the alternative thing is what it is now.
Yeah, and like that, the genre lines are so like blurred anymore. Like even like you can't call it rock. You have a million rock subgenres, but like even like out in Texas or Oklahoma, it's like it ain't like you think of Texas music and the automatic thought would be, oh, it must be country because it's Texas. Mm-hmm. But no, you go over there and it like, what's popping off out there right now is the stuff that like you tend to play, like the distorted guitars, some of it's grungy. It's just really cool to watch.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk about, I believe it came out in February, 'Cause It's Mine. Did I get that right? Hopefully. No. I always like to double check.
No, that's absolutely correct.
Yeah. Well, man, I'll tell you just in my opinion, that's the one that like really hooked me. Like I know it's your newest one, but it really unique sound to you. It just sounds just like what you would play, like after listening to the rest of this stuff. And can you give us a little, I know it's been out for a couple months now, but can you give us a little like rundown on what it's about or the inspiration behind it?
Absolutely. So, the inspiration behind it was, I started going out to Nashville in 2020 once COVID all happened, but I was playing bars around here and that kind of figured out, this is what I wanted to do as a career. And I started meeting up with a couple of people, and just straight out the gate, it was a bunch of folks that, number one, couldn't play any instrument or anything like that, but they were telling me from the start, hey, this is how you need to dress. This is how you need to talk. This is how you need to write your songs. This is how you need to sing them. And just from the very start of it, it kind of put a bad taste in my mouth. And I'm like, you know, not dogging towards them, but it's like, what the hell do you know about this? Like, you don't even know me yet. You've never heard a song from me, but you're already telling me how to run this. So it was kind of placating on that, and almost in a tongue-in-cheek kind of way, where I'm, you know, making fun of them and kind of making fun of myself, but saying, you know, this is, I'm going to do basically the exact opposite of what you're telling me to do and just hold on to this. Because since I was a kid, that was one thing my dad drilled into my head. He's like, listen, you can have a ton of managers, you can have a ton of band members or anything like that, but if you're a solo artist, this is the only career you're ever going to have. So you better defend it with your life. Because for anyone else, even with a label, you're always able to be replaced. But in your own life and your own career, this is the only chance you have to have it. So if you're not satisfied with what you're doing creatively and you compromise that, it's going to be something that you're going to have to live with for the rest of your life. So that it was really, that was more of the inspiration behind it. And then I, you know, it's something I really believe in to this day.
Yeah. And it also has to be a good thing that you learned that lesson or were given that advice this early too in your career, because like down the road, like it might've been too late. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, as well as I do, like you can get a ton of advice from people, and at the end of the day, you still have to make a lot of mistakes and learn the lessons the hard way, which I have. And I'm thankful for every single mistake I've made, specifically because it gives me the opportunity to learn from them and grow, whether it's being an artist or being a songwriter or being more on the business side and learning how to, you know, handle everything that goes along with that. Like there's a ton of mistakes that I've made and will continue to make, but that's, you know, there's certain things that you can't compromise as an artist. Otherwise you're going to live in a regretful world for the rest of your life, I feel like.
Yeah. And when it does come to that business stuff, like that whole side of it, like aside from the creativity part, are you pretty much a one man show when it comes to that? Is it just completely independent, you, everything?
I've definitely got some help from management, and I do have a booking agency now. So I'm with Oracle Management, and then my booking agency is Reliant. So they've kind of taken a lot of the weight that I normally would do by myself, which helps out a lot. But once again, one of these things that I was drilled into like for years was be able to carry a guitar in one hand and a briefcase in the other and know how to use them both well. And that's always stuck with me. So I'm always like, I'm always asking questions, because the music industry, I always relate it to, you know, like in Harry Potter, the like that chamber or whatever where all the staircases keep changing constantly. Always. That's the music industry. As soon as they feel like they've got an understanding of what it is right now, it changes over again. So I'm always interested in the newest technologies, what, you know, what's going on in these kind of copyright laws or anything like that. And it just helps to know this stuff, because, you know, I'd rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
Yeah, exactly. And it sounds like you know what you're doing too. So that's good. Like, and you have, like you said, like with that, with the help from like management and stuff, like it's a wonder how some of these guys, like they book all the shows, they manage themselves. It's a wonder how some of them do it for as long as they do.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Some of them don't like having managers either, which I mean, I'm not an artist. I don't really know. I don't know why that would be, but like some of them love doing it on their own.
Yeah, I did it for 2 years, and I learned a lot from it. But I can tell you one thing, just from a creative standpoint, when you have that much of a workload in regards to like calling people constantly for bookings, that's number one, that's a lot of rejection. So that can, after a while, it can kind of affect your creative process, because now you're like, what the hell am I doing? You know, if you got 300 people you called and you get six yeses, you're like, well, fuck, what? You know, I'm in the wrong business. But it definitely helps for me to outsource that a little bit, but I still like to be in the know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice, man. How about, let's talk about your your band? Like who's the personnel that you record with or play live with? How'd you guys get together? How'd that all happen?
Yeah, so the guys I've been with right now, I've been using something. It's like a forum on Facebook called Nashville Yep, YEP. And that's kind of where artists can communicate, hey, I need a guitarist for a show or whatever. But sometimes you get long-term guys, which I was fortunate enough to get. And at this moment, I've got a bassist named Zeb Sal. My guitar player is Clayton Tuning. And then my drummer is Cameron Smith. All Nashville guys, all kick-ass bands. And then on the recording side, most of it, believe it or not, is actually just me and Jerry getting all the instrumentation done. I mean, he and I say me and Jerry, it's Jerry doing all the instrumentation. So it's basically all in the box, all through either Pro Tools or Logic or whatever DAW. And that's the recording. And sometimes if we want to do something with more like analog sound, then we'll do that, which I have done before. I've done the whole live room recording, and that's a blast as well.
Yeah, wow. I mean, it sounds that because on the technical aspect, when it comes to like the Pro Tools and all that stuff, and like stuff like that, does that minimize the process like by a lot? Like versus analog, that's just me being ignorant to what like recording is.
No, absolutely.
Like because analog and okay, yeah. So analog would be like that's like the whole process. Like it's analog. But like Pro Tools, is just all digitized, easy to do. Like, how does that work for you?
Oh, it definitely speeds up the process in a lot of ways. I'm not, you know, I love both worlds of it. I love the digital world, and I absolutely love the analog world. However, I would recommend, especially for artists that are kind of in my particular situation, like getting started, just to be aware of your budget with that, because analog recording will be expensive. Even if you're on the cheaper side, it's going to cost a couple grand typically. But technology nowadays is so impressively, like it's so good, and it's getting better day by day, where it's a lot better for me just to be able to speed up the process, get a song in within a couple of weeks, as opposed to like working for months and months and months on just a single. Maybe down the line, if there's a label or something where that's like backing that up, then I could think about doing something like that. But as for right now, just in regards to being frugal, I have to kind of expedite the process and keep it digital for right now, which it seems to be working.
Yeah. I mean, like what I know it comes to a point to where, like the analog, like it would be, I'm sure artists are always saying, oh, analog sounds way better. I love it. Do it. Keep it the old school way. But there comes to a point, just like with everything, like if it's, if like the Pro Tools stuff, if that's more convenient, cheaper, I mean, like use that, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it's to the point now where unless you're truly like some kind of serious audiophile who's got, you know, a $50,000 speaker set up, you're not truly going to be able to tell the difference between one production from the other, whether one's analog or digital. Sometimes with drums, that might be the case. But for the most part, I'm like, dude, if people are listening through headphones or through their car systems, they're not really going to be able to pick up on those little nuances. You know, it's not that case. And it's so impressive now how good these plugins are that you're just, you know, you'd really just be catering towards the 1% of like serious audiophiles that like look for that stuff, you know?
The dorks.
Yeah, the dorks, yeah. And I love the dorks. I'm a dork myself, but.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Awesome. So we talked before the technical difficulties. I asked you about Nashville. Do you make your way out there a lot? Whether it's to just hang out or like create or anything? I asked this because Rage Rowdy's based in Nashville, and like they, you know, I see artists going in and out of there all the time, and I was wondering if you ever go there often.
Oh no, I'm in Nashville like 3 or 4 times a month every month. I'm up there as much as I possibly can be. I love it up there. It's a weird relationship I have with the place because I love everything the city provides, and there's so many incredible people that you meet out there, and I'm fortunate enough that I'm close, being in Metro Atlanta where it's like a 3-hour drive. I literally can do turn and burns like right there and come right back. But it has its own element of just having that hustle and bustle that a city tends to have, which is great. But at the same time, mm-hmm. I'm one of those people. I'm kind of like the Grinch. I can be around people for a little while, and then I got to, you know, recede back to Mount Crumpet and be back in isolation.
I hear you on that. So with you being an artist who goes to Nashville and experiences it, do you ever see like the – when I talk to guys from Texas or Oklahoma, they – obviously, there's like that unspoken rivalry that the two areas have between Nashville, a lot of them say that they're just like, they don't want to deal with like the beast, they call it the industry, like chewing them up and spitting them back out kind of thing. Can you explain that? What do they mean when they say that? Or what do people mean when they aren't afraid of that? Or maybe they think it like a whole nother way. Like, what do you think of the industry in Nashville and in town?
Well, I'll tread lightly just because I'm not a signed artist, so I can't say truly anecdotally, but yeah. I know just well enough to kind of, I guess, break down what they're saying. It is a business just like anything else. And the goal of any business is trying to make money. Typically what that does mean though, is when people move to Nashville or they start getting signed and their career starts taking off, a lot of times you're going to do what makes the most money right then and there. And a lot of people who are doing publishing deals where you're a songwriter, they're not really going to encourage your type of songwriting if it's not selling at the moment. They want you to write the top 10 right now. And I guess what they mean by like feed the beast or be a part of the machine or whatever is like, I see, and I know what they're talking about, because I can sometimes see a lot of people that I see from all different walks of life moved to Nashville. And when I first meet them, you know, they're a couple months into living in the city and they're so unique and so unbelievably talented. And they have like an individual fingerprint of a sound. It's like, holy shit. Yeah. Thank God. And then a couple years go by or even months and they realize, like I said, it's a business. So they have to kind of switch gears and become what Nashville wants them to be and not vice versa. And you lose a lot of integrity. And that's where I guess the argument comes into play of, oh, well, everything sounds the same. It's like, yeah, well, there's a reason to that. This is because that's what's selling and that's what everyone else is doing, or at least the ones that are trying to play the game and make the money. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, that's your prerogative. Right. But I will have to say, all these Texas guys and all these Oklahoma people, they are running the show in my book right now. Like even guys like Coe Wetzel and people like that, Whiskey Myers, like they are so unbelievably talented. And even Zach Bryan, like they are the zeitgeist right now. And everyone else in Nashville is kind of trying to follow suit and be more similar to them because they've been so individualistic for so long. Because you know as well as I do, Texas is its own country. And those guys just always had that sound that they built within that, you know, in that landscape, and it's blowing up like crazy, and I couldn't be happier for them because it's my shit.
Yeah, dude, me too. And like you pretty much took the words right out of my mouth. It's like they're literally like they're what everyone else wants to be now. And not even 2 years ago, it seems like no one over around our neck of the woods, like on this side of the country, no one knew who the fuck these guys were. No one knew who Coe Wetzel was. No one knew who Whiskey Myers was. And then just in a snap, they blew up. And now you go to like places like Nashville and by the way, it sounds like I'm always shit talking Nashville on here, but I swear I'm not. It's just, I deal with a lot of Texas people. So dude, everyone listening, I like Nashville. It's okay.
You're all good.
Yeah. But what I was saying, it's like, it's just funny, like you said, just seeing everyone, that's the cool thing now, like the red dirt, the Texas rock, Texas country. So yeah, it's really interesting to see it like kind of merge. It's almost as if there isn't really a rivalry anymore. You know what I mean? It's more of everyone getting along, trying to play some good shit.
Exactly. And I think a big thing that makes Texas stick out so much right now in the music space is because they're dangerous. They really do have a certain grit that, you know as well as I do, you can't fake it. You can try to fake it, but they're going to sniff it out pretty damn quickly. you know, the fan bases are not morons. They're going to be able to pick up on inauthentic songwriting behaviors, whatever. If you're trying to be a poser, they're gonna catch you real quick. And Texas artists, from what I can tell, especially the ones that I follow, they're so genuine, and they really are that way. I've hung out with Ko Wetzel a couple of times, and he is exactly like that. He's a down to earth person, but when he hits that stage, he's Ko Wetzel, and that's it. Like, and it's impressive, man. I love seeing that. That's like a real artist in my eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and I have examples of that. Like Ko. Like, I've never met Ko, but I have heard. I know like Otis and guys in his band, but like they all say he is like a literal like animal. Like on stage, off stage, like obviously, like you said, he's very down to earth apparently, mm-hmm. but like he doesn't fake anything. And like a guy I know and like his whole band, like that I probably know the best out there, who I always bring up on this podcast because they're like one of my faves and one of yours too, is Austin Mead.
Yeah.
And there's a switch there, I think. And this isn't just Texas artists anymore. This is probably any of them. It's like off stage and on stage, from what I've seen, it's like they're totally normal dudes, but when they go on stage, they flip that switch and like their live show or whatever, like they're like their own character. You know what I mean? It's like they're taking on a certain look and to connect with the fans, to give a good show, I guess. Which leads into my next thing for you is with your live show, how much like do you plan that out? Like is it like a thing that you think about all the time, like trying to plan out, make it better? Is it just like, I'm gonna go up there, do what I gotta do? Like that's a weird question. Do you effort do you put into like planning it out? Like trying out some new stuff like that.
I'll always have like a bit of a foundation just to kind of set me in place and be like, okay, we're gonna do it this way. But when it comes to like having a choreography down of like, okay, walk this many steps, turn this way around, like I don't do it like that. I'm pretty much, I since high school, you know, if I had to present something, I'm gonna wing it for the most part. I'm gonna get the meat and potatoes of it and go off with it. But I'm pretty much the same on the live aspect of my shows. I love letting my band do what they do best, which is obviously play their instruments. And I pride myself on being someone who really likes to exemplify really good musicians. So we go on stage and we have mm-hmm. fun. It besides the set list and having certain like, I guess, bullet points of like, hey, let's make sure we hit like this, just to have the professionalism, that's one thing. But if I'm really feeling something, I kind of give them the signal, they're going to go an extra couple bars with the guitar solos or something like that, drum fills, just to feel it off the crowd. And I think based on how many people I've seen play live, and you know, guys like we talked about, like Austin and Ko and the Moonrocks and all those dudes, when you see people like that play live, you can't help but want to make shows more lively like that. And I think a way to make shows more energetic is to almost have that touch of chaos to it. It can't be too formulaic. It can't be too predetermined. There needs to be just a little bit of what the fuck's going to happen next kind of vibe, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, man. And like that's, and I think that a lot of the time, like the live show, which we were talking about earlier, like that could make or break, like if someone's going to become like a fan versus just catching a show, like that's what's going to make them stick around, like the engagement with the fans, like in a live aspect and like the interaction, like it's all about the experience. I feel like, I don't know if that's how you feel, it's like the live shows, like I feel like it's overlooked a lot of times. Basically, I think like that's for like could be make or break for a lot of people.
No, one, and I couldn't agree more, because I think especially right now with this generation of artists, clearly we have so much great tools at our disposal with being able to basically create a studio album in your bedroom on your computer, but there's not a whole lot of people, at least from what I can see, that are kind of breaking into the industry the old-fashioned way by just playing shows and working the road. And that's something that's been drilled into me since mm-hmm. the beginning, and that's something that I've done since the beginning. And it really shows, because you're always going to have technical difficulties. You're always going to have something that goes unplanned during a show. but you can really tell the people who have, you know, put their 10,000 hours in based off of how they react to those issues that come to fruition during the time of playing. A lot of people, you can see how they just go into panic mode. And I'm like, oh, you're not ready for this. Like you're not prepared for this kind of live world yet. And it's not something you can't fix, but like, it's not being drilled as hard in this day and age as opposed to like, oh, well, do your TikTok videos, do your YouTube stuff, which is great. You know, that's great exposure. But if you can do a great YouTube video with all your editing and stuff, but meanwhile, you can't even go sit down at a brewery and play three songs in a way that's going to get people's attention, then yeah, you could lose fans.
Yeah. And speaking of the TikTok stuff and like the social media aspect, is that something that you've kind of dove into at all? Like with the, whether it's doing skits or vlogs or playing some songs on TikTok, any of that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I've definitely stepped up my social media game, but the only way I was able to do that was I'm a natural born goofball and just jackass. So I had to find a way to make this fun for me because I had, you know, you obviously when you have an EP or you have a song coming out, you want to promote it so people know about it. But I would just get up there and I'd have to do, you know, holding up the camera and be like, I just made the song of the summer and I wanted to just bash my head on a desk. I'm like, dude, I got to find a way at least to make this humorous on my eyes or to my eyes. And then if everyone else likes it, that's a bonus. But if I'm not enjoying this is going to be hell for me. So I've definitely implemented a lot of humor into my posts. And I think people are catching on to that now because it's like, I'm sure some of the stuff I'm posting, they're just like, what the fuck is this guy's deal?
Yeah, dude, I caught a couple of your reels on Instagram today, and then yeah, I think you got the knack for it, whether you admit it or not. I think you got the knack for the 6-second video or whatever the hell this genre is called.
Hey, absolutely, man. You gotta be able to not take yourself seriously.
Yeah, amen, man. So let's talk about got any new music coming out? Anything coming down the pipe like that? Anything exciting going on that we could look forward to?
Absolutely. I've got a brand new single called Sick of It that's going to be dropping on May 16th. And then we're going to be having a song, I believe, dropping on, I believe it's July 14th, and then, June 14th, and then having the EP. We'll announce that date, but that'll be sometime in July. So we'll have the full EP drop in July, but this is kind of like pre leading up to everything with two singles beforehand, but I'm super excited for everyone to get to hear these. These are definitely gonna hit hard.
Yeah, I'm really excited to hear them, brother. I'm looking forward to it. I'm glad I found your stuff, and it was a pleasant surprise to hear the music coming out from you guys, and it's awesome. What about touring coming up, like for the summer, or any cool shows, festival slots, anything like that?
Yeah, I'm mainly playing in the Southeast for the most part during the month of June, but I'll be in Villarica, Georgia, Plant City, Florida, McCollumsburg, Pennsylvania, Geneva, Indiana, and Greenville, Kentucky just in the month of June. So if they go to my website, tristantritt.com, they can see all the dates and all the updates with that. But yeah, we're going to be hitting the Southeast hard.
Hell yeah, man. So Tristan, thanks a lot for hopping on, dude. It was a great conversation. Sorry about the difficulties at first. I'm glad we figured it out.
Oh, you're all good, man. Thank you so much for having me, Sam.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone, thanks for listening. He threw out his website there, but go look up Tristan Tritt on all his socials. Like, I think you got what, Instagram, Facebook, the basics?
Yep, Instagram, Twitter, all that good stuff. Just look up Tristan Tritt and you'll find it.
Yep, awesome. And also give us a Google, raiseRowdy.com and Rowdy Alternative on all the socials. And appreciate you guys listening. We'll see you next time. My boots would look good on your bed, and I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. Take you home now. shine. Make a mess of this self-imposed line.